Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to the father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them." I'm going to read the whole parable. "Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother's come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered to his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and have never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" Let me tell you some of the stuff that goes on in this parable. It's a rather important parable. It kind of links everything of the mission of Jesus Christ all into one little location. Jesus Christ believes that things that are lost should be found. He believes that lost things, lost people, lost creatures matter to him, and he's willing to do what it takes to get them back. Let me go through this parable and help you understand a little bit more. So Jesus telling this parable, and this man who has two sons, when the younger one comes to the father and says, "Dad, give me my share of the estate," that was highly improper. That's not something that you do back in those days. And in fact, it would kind of be improper if it happened even today. Imagine you going to your dad and saying, "Dad, give me my share of the inheritance." Well, when do you normally get the inheritance from your parents? When your parents are dead. So essentially he's telling his dad, "You know what, I really don't care about you that much. I would actually prefer if you were dead. You're not dead, but is it okay if I have half the money? Would that be okay?" Now, this would be a complete and utter slap in the face, but what's really interesting about it is the father actually acquiesces and says, "Okay, you can have half the estate." Now, the question is, how in the world do you get half the estate? In order to get half the estate, in order to liquidate that stuff, you're going to have to sell a bunch of stuff off. If you're going to sell off half of your wealth and give it to your child, chances are you may not be in the best financial position around. And you are now giving this child money. And question, do you think the father knew what the son was going to do with the money? Chances are he knew if this kid did what he did previous, what he did later on, chances are this kid was a wild kid. And he knew full well that this child was going to take his money and when he was going to go off. And that's exactly what the son does. This is a slap in the face to the son. Back in those days, if this would have actually occurred, a normal Jewish family would have simply allowed him to go off and never speak to him ever again. If that son would have returned back in those days, he would have been shunned. He would have been rejected. He would not have been allowed to come back even into the house. That's how it worked. You want the inheritance? You think I'm dead? Fine, you're dead too. Go, be gone. So this guy goes out, And I love this. And he says, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. I know. The church can sometimes make it sound like wild living is not enjoyable. And I know there's a reason why the church says that. There's a reason why the church says, you know, going and living a lifestyle that is of a party nature really isn't good for you. And we do everything that we can in order to make that living sound as unpleasant as possible. But I think that there might be a danger in that, actually, because I've heard that all my life, and then all of a sudden I had something to drink. And I realized, wow, I'm not burning in hell right now, and I just had an alcoholic beverage. Or I just went to a party and got a little tipsy. And my goodness, it sure was a whole lot of fun, and God didn't strike me dead on the spot. I'm going to be honest. I try and be as honest as I can without going overboard here. But sometimes wild living is enjoyable. It's not beneficial, right? I think we can say that safely. But I don't want to ever give the... Because I think sometimes people then go off, live wildly, and they say to themselves, gosh, it's not as bad as I thought. I was told by the church that I'd be racked with guilt, and I'm not really ridden with guilt. In fact, I quite enjoy this so much, I'm probably going to go and do it again. And all of a sudden, the message of the church becomes irrelevant. I can tell you that there are times, if you go and live wildly, you might actually enjoy it. But it's not beneficial. There will come a day when that will end. There will come a day when those things that you think are good and fun will all of a sudden come crashing down, and you will be left destitute. And that's just a fact of life. You can argue with me all the live long day. You can say, but I'm having a lot of fun, but I'm young, but this is so enjoyable. I'm really not hurting anybody. Guess what? You are. And you may have to end up getting to the end of the rope for you to experience that. So I'm not going to lie to you. You might enjoy what you're doing, even though it is 100% completely wrong. Some people enjoy getting drunk. They do. They love it. They think it's fantastic. Some people enjoy using drugs. Some people enjoy wild living. Some people enjoy stealing. Some people are little kleptos, go around taking everything around them because there's a thrill in that. Some people enjoy racing their cars super, super, super duper fast and dangerously. And they get a thrill out of it and they enjoy that. But there's going to come a day when you're going to have to realize, you're going to have to, as this younger man did, have to come to your senses and realize, this is not right. This is not what I should be doing. Even though it feels good, even though I enjoy it immensely, this is not what I should be doing. Also, it's really interesting because after he spent everything he had, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. And I wondered to myself, where are all his friends? I mean, if you show up into town, right, if you just got a major inheritance, a couple $100,000, and you go to Vegas and start spending it lavishly, you might end up with a lot of friends real fast, like, right? They're like, ooh, I like you. I want to be around you. You're paying for all my booze. You're paying for all my gambling. You're paying for everything. This is wonderful. You might have what you might call friends. I can tell you. Ask anybody. They are not your friends. They only like you for your money. They only like you for your party. They only want to be around you because you're fun that way. And let me tell you, when the times get difficult, people will run. But he loves me, so I want to have sex with him. Well, once you get pregnant, there is a very good chance that said man will no longer be in your life. It's just how it is. Things can come crashing down. All of a sudden, you become so addicted to alcohol or drugs that all of a sudden, people don't want to be around you anymore because you're feeding something that no one really enjoys. And you might end up in the hospital. I guarantee you, who's not showing up? They're not going to be your friends. If you have family left, I guarantee you who's going to be showing up. It'll be the family. It'll be the people that truly love you. So it's one of these things when I could imagine this guy, after being the life of the party, and probably enjoying every minute. And I also want to know how long it took, because sometimes it takes a while, doesn't it? Sometimes it takes a while for you to run out of your capital. Sometimes it takes a little while for you to run out of that, what did we used to call it, sowing your wild oats? I don't know why we called it that. We're not farmers no more. But that's what happens. There's going to come a time when all of a sudden that's going to run out. And the question is, how long will it take? I pray that it is shorter than longer. I make a prayer right now that if that's how you live and that's how you move and that's how you enjoy life, I pray that you crash soon. Isn't this an uplifting message? Isn't this great? Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Manny. I pray you crash soon. You know why? Because the longer it goes, the more damage it takes. I don't know how long it took for this young man in this little fictitious story that Jesus is telling, but he comes to his senses. I'm sorry, he didn't come to his senses. He first of all had to hire himself out. And he had to hire himself out to a pig farmer. Now that might not mean a whole lot to you and me. I've personally never been around pigs. I got three of them in my house. I mean, this is kind of messy. But I've never been around like real pigs. Like the slopping of the corn and we're going to, it's no good. I've heard this. I actually went to a farm in St. Louis. Some friends of ours had a real actual working farm, and holy cow! I mean, my goodness, they're like, feed the pigs. I'm like, you're kidding me. They said, take out the trash. And I didn't, like, where do I take it to? They're like, see the barrel out there? You're going to need the matches. Go out and take out the trash. You know, it's a whole nother lifestyle. Now, for us, it's not that big of a deal. Now, for a Jewish person, how offensive would this be? Pigs were absolutely and utterly unclean, detestable creatures. You would, if you were a true Jewish person, you wouldn't have a pig farm, let alone go and actually work at it. What this man is finding out, and this is what I find out after some people crash and burn, they find themselves doing things they would never have otherwise in their right mind ever have done in their life. They sell themselves out. And you've got to ask the question. And it's hard. It's hard to ask the question, am I selling myself out? It's tough. Because in the middle of it, it makes perfect sense to you. That's why we always seek advice. That's why we always go to parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and pastors and teachers and people that we trust in order to give us some feedback. Like, am I doing okay? And hopefully if they're smart enough and if you really are in the toilet, they're going to say, no, you're in the toilet. And this is not a good place for you to be. He hires himself out to feed pigs. And the hard part about it is he can barely even make it by. He's so hungry. He's actually looking at pig food and thinking to himself, that looks yummy, right? I've seen people crash and burn in Vegas, and all they do is they go to McDonald's and they grab all the ketchup packets they can. And I've actually seen people eating ketchup packets for a meal. Oh my goodness, are you serious? But that's what happened. This guy is so hungry. He has crashed so hard. He has gone so far. He is now doing something that he should never have been doing in the first place. He's feeding pigs, and he is so hungry he would be willing to eat pig food. That's when verse 17 is beautiful. He comes to his senses. I wonder what the Father is doing at this point. I mean, if I understand the story correctly, I can assume something about the Father while the Son is far off. The Father is sitting on the porch with his eyes down the road, wondering where his kid is at. I think the Father still led his life. I think the Father still worked. I think the older son still worked. I think that's what you do. But I think that every spare moment he had, I think the father was looking down the road while this kid was gone. So he comes to his senses. He says, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and went to his father. I wish you could really hit that impact. Jesus is not just talking about literal people living in wild. It's a parable to tell us that sometimes we end up moving so far away from God that we destroy ourselves. And it doesn't have to be, the dangerous thing is it doesn't have to be in wild living. Sometimes it's a slow drift. Sometimes people are connected at one point and all of a sudden they just start drifting away. Little by little by little. Until all of a sudden they wake up and they go, where am I? And what am I doing? Why am I so far away from God? And there you have a couple choices. You can keep drifting, or you can return. If you make the choice and say, I want to leave. I don't like this anymore. This Christian thing is a bunch of garbage. You can leave. God's not going to make you stay here. God's not going to make you stay in a relationship with Him that you don't want to be in. And you can take that and completely reject it and go. But I pray that there comes a point when you come to your senses and go, maybe, just maybe, I should come back to God. And you might even feel like this young man, is God going to have me back? I know it's hard for parents when they see wayward children. The question is, when they come back, do they let them come back? I mean, it's hard. It's difficult. When it comes to spiritual matters, you could have drifted so far away from God. As long as you have a pulse, as long as you are drawing a breath, you can come back to God. So he comes to his senses, and he's going to go off, and he's got this cutesy little speech prepared. We do this, right, with God? Maybe we just made a whole mess of our life, and we've got this great rehearsed speech. Lord, I'm sorry. Gosh, you know, I drifted away. I don't know what to do, but I'm just going to come back, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me a hired hand. And we come up with these cute little phrases and cute little things. And verse 20. So he got up, went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. You just don't do that back in those days. You just don't. Someone walks away, someone demands an inheritance, and then goes and wastes every last nickel of that inheritance somewhere else. You return, you could show up at the front doorstep. That's why the guy was hoping maybe I'd become a hired hand. Because he knows, for a fact, I ain't making it through the front door. I'm not going to be sleeping in my bed that night. And I'm sure that when Dad finds out, he may not even call me by my name. He may not even remember me. He may have completely erased me from his life. But what's amazing about this kid is still far off, and the dad starts running. I don't really run a whole lot because it's really funny when I run. I'm not really that good at it. Older, we just don't run anymore. I mean, it's just the way it is. You young people, you know, you're like running around doing all that. You know, you get a little older, you're like, I'll walk briskly. How's that? I'm not gonna. I actually tried it one time. My son's baseball team, and we were doing this drill, and we had to do it where you had to catch it and throw it perfectly around a square. And if you dropped the ball, you had to run. Well, the question was going to come to me: if one of these punk little kids dropped the ball, am I going to be running these bases? Because I just don't know. So I did. I dropped the ball. Some other kid dropped the ball. I'm like, you know what? I'm here. I'm with the kids. I'm going to do it. I'm going to start running. So I started running. I made it around. I got laughed a few times, but that's okay. I made it back. And then sure enough, the very next ball that's thrown dropped. I'm like, I ran again. Third time it happened. No, y'all kids, y'all are running. I'm not running. Back in those days, that'd be the same thing. It would be absolutely improper for a man to run. Because one thing that you would have to do is if you were wearing proper attire, you would have robes going all the way down to your feet. Have you ever tried to run in one of those things? I have not. I choose not to wear something all the way down to my feet and then try and run in them. In order to do that, he would have had to do what? Yeah, all the women speak like, I know what I'd have to do if I was going to run. Yeah, I know. All the men are like, what do we do? I don't. You'd have to actually pick up your robes a little bit and in order to run. And for a man to do that would be absolutely wrong. Now imagine also, if this guy is a far way off, I wonder if he's by the neighbor's house. Because I know what the neighbor's thinking. The neighbor's going, uh-oh, trouble just came back to roost. And all of a sudden, there's your neighbor. You're like, here's the dude coming down the street. And the neighbor looks over, and there's dad. And he's probably thinking, you know what, the dad, I bet he's running to go give him the biggest giant backhand known to mankind. He's probably going to go out there, tackle the dude, get him on the ground, and pummel him like a UFC fighter. And what a surprise that then the guy gets all the way down, embarrassing himself all the way, gets to him, and what happens? Threw his arms around him and kissed him. I don't think we really understand that a whole lot in terms of the embarrassment. Have you ever had to be embarrassed for your child or your spouse or someone else? When you've had to do something that you didn't cause, I mean, this man didn't cause it, right? This dad didn't tell the son, here's half my money, go waste it. This son completely disrespected his father, ran away, and the father humiliates himself. Do you know to what depth God had to humiliate himself to bring us back to him? The worst possible punishment back in those days was death on a cross. If you committed other crimes, maybe they'd just hack off your head or stone you. But if they really wanted to make an example of you, if they really wanted to make sure that you were not just punished, but punished in such a way that you were absolutely humiliated, disgraced, and gone through the most painful thing known to mankind, they would put you on a cross. You know that phrase we use, that something is excruciating? Where'd that word come from? Excruces. Out of the cross. That's where that word actually originated. When you go through excruciating pain, it's trying to say this is as painful as dying on a cross. You would be stripped. You might even be naked. You would have nails driven into your wrists and into your feet. You wouldn't be killed in private. You wouldn't be killed behind the city. They would put these crosses up right outside the main gate, right outside on a hillside, so that when people come walking up, they look up and they see you there. And imagine now if you were being unjustly accused, lied about, and you are going to die for a crime you never even committed. I think it'd be bad enough going to jail for something you didn't do. But imagine you're going to die for it. God suffered a humiliating death for you. That's why we have the cross. That's why we remember the cross. Because when we look at a cross, we say, God ran to me. I didn't deserve it. I had rejected him. I had left him. I had essentially slapped him in the face. I walked away, and he could have done anything to me. But instead what he did was he suffered the greatest humiliation, God himself, suffering and dying. Let's take a moment. I have a video that I want you to watch so that you can understand just a moment. On Easter, we have to pause and say, Christ was humiliated for me. when this man ran, he humiliated himself, and God was willing to do whatever it took to have us come back to him. Sometimes we miss that. Sometimes we forget that what we've done has caused God a lot of pain. But he would do it again, and he would do it again. He would do whatever it takes to have you back. He wants you back so that he can run down, throw his arms around you, and kiss you. Now, it's interesting because the son, again, starts getting out this little prepared speech, right? Do you remember the prepared speech? Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. Right? Remember that speech? So he starts saying it. Son said to his father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Where's the last line? Where'd it go? Where's the make me to be one of your hired men? The way I read this, the way I understand this, is the dad is going to have absolutely nothing to do with a hired hand. When you come to God, he is not interested in having you sweep the stables in heaven or mop the toilets. He doesn't want you in that way. He wants you as a son. He wants you as a daughter. And I could just imagine the exuberance as this man, this father, says, no, 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 wait. And he interrupts the son. And the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. What does that mean? Well, first of all, put the best robe on him. That was only reserved for the sons. That was only reserved for those that were worthy enough to have a robe, something so pricely, something so costly. And then put a ring on his finger? What does that mean? Well, if you put a ring on a man's finger, back in those days, if you put your ring on your son's finger, you are saying, in effect, you have all my authority. You have all my power. If you went to go buy some groceries at the grocery store and you needed to pay that debt, one of the ways you could pay it is let's drip a little bit of wax on the piece of paper. I got my dad's ring and I will put it down into that wax and seal it. My dad will pay for this. In our vernacular, we would say, Daddy whipped out the credit card and said, here you go. And you're like, say what? You are kidding me. The guy just went and spent all your money. He just squandered it all and now you are going to trust him? You got to remember that when it comes to God, when you come back to him, you're not on probation. You're not on restriction and you're not grounded for the rest of your life. When God says you are forgiven and you are restored, it is just that. You are now back as sons and daughters of God. Please, no side trips to distant land place. If you could imagine as the son probably looked down a couple times going, I remember that. Could you imagine him coming to dad saying, hey dad, I'm gonna go witness to the people in the distant land. The dad would probably just had to give him a good look, like, you know. No side trips back to distant land. You're there with God. He's given you a robe. Not just any robe, but his son Jesus Christ, a robe of righteousness. He has not just said, I don't trust you anymore. God says, I trust you implicitly. I'll give you my ring. Sandals on your feet, that was reserved for the kids. If you were a slave, if you were a servant, if you were a hired help, you didn't wear shoes. So you could quickly look out into a group and spot who are the servants and who are the kids. He restored him and restored him immediately. And he said, bring the fattened calf. Why? You know, we sometimes think of this just as like a celebration, like, hey, we're just going to have a really good meat party. I mean, hey, wouldn't you like to kill the fattened calf, carve it up, and throw it on the barbie? I mean, this is good stuff. But I think that calf had to die for a reason. I think this wasn't just, let's have a party. I think this was a sacrifice. I think that it was an offering, a sin offering, back to God. And that blood that was shed, that innocent blood that was shed, covered then the sins of that son. He says, let's have a feast and celebrate. For the son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. And just as in the previous parables, there is more rejoicing in heaven over one person who was off in distant land, who left God slapping him in the face, who left God laughing as he's walking away with all of his money. There's more rejoicing over that person that returns home than those of us that stick around all our life. Let's not have any like forced celebrations like, hey, I want to make God happy. I'm going to go and live wildly and crazily, and then when I return, God will be so happy. No. Because sometimes, have you ever seen people get stuck in distant land? Have you ever seen people get stuck in that life and never get a chance to return? It's not something to gamble with. If you have walked away from God, the way you are restored is through a sacrifice and through a death. And through that death and that resurrection. That's what Easter is about. That's why Easter is so important. The very mechanism that brings us back to the Father, the very mechanism that makes us sons and daughters of God once again, is the cross of Jesus Christ. His death, but more importantly, His resurrection, Him coming back from the dead. That is why we talk about it. That's why we harp on it. That's why we learn it. That's why we gaze at the cross. That's why we ponder this amazing, massive thing, because God was willing to do whatever it took. If you are lost, I pray that you are found. But what about you that maybe have been found already? Is there a story for you? Yeah, you're the other part of the story. You ready to read that? You're the older brother. Man, I tell you, I find older son tendencies in me all the time. Meanwhile, the older son was in the... What was the older son doing? He was working! He was working his tail off! Holy cow! Could you imagine that? Oh, yeah, because once son number two left... Where did all the rest of the work land on? And chances are, you're living on now your own inheritance. You just got half of your estate has now been divided up. And now you're living on your half of the inheritance, probably scraping by. You probably had to put in extra duties. Have you ever had to do that? Have you ever said, gosh, why do I have to live so cleanly? Why do I have to do it so perfectly? Why can't I go and have a little fun? And he's out there working. Oh. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. Could you imagine that? Like, there's a part. And I could imagine what I would have thought. Oh, gosh, you're having a party? Well, you know, I have been working kind of hard. I have been. I've been slaving away in that nursery and kids' church. And I've been doing all this work for God. There must be a party for me. Wow, how fun is this? And then he gets closer and he asks a question like, what's the big occasion? What's going on? Your brother has come. What? I don't have a brother. I had a brother a little while ago, but he's dead now. He's gone. And even if he was still physically alive, he is dead to me. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. I wonder, I think it would have been a better part, you know, Jesus needs some help telling stories. So if I were going to add anything to this, I would say, yeah, and I would have had the servant say, and he gave him a robe and he gave him the ring. Yeah, wouldn't that be this like just twisted in that older brother like, what are you talking about? You're kidding me. So the older brother became angry and refused to go in. We miss this. Sometimes we say to ourselves, yeah, I have a right to be upset. You know, I work my tail off and I don't get nothing. I've chosen this lifestyle called Christianity, and what do I get out of it? Look at all those people. They're all having a whole lot of fun over there. What do I get for staying home and reading my Bible? What do I get for staying home and praying? And we become sulky. And you know what? You know what's so sad about this? Is we miss this in the fact that what the older brother does is just as insulting and humiliating to the father as what the younger son did. Because he refuses to come in. And if you refuse to come in, what does daddy have to do? Daddy has to go out. No, well, wait. You're going to make daddy leave the party? You're going to cause daddy to come to you? And sometimes we do that to God. We say, God owes us. We deserve this. I've been doing all this work. What do I get? They get all the fun. I get all the junk. All the work. And he tells us, and he essentially says, I'm not coming in. I'm not going to party. Verse 29. So his father went out and he pleaded with him. Could you imagine that? Pleading with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. You know what? You got to be careful when you're working for God that you don't fill yourself up a little bit too much, like your sin don't stink. I never disobeyed your orders? Are you serious? Can I show a hands of anyone in here who has never disobeyed God's orders? Oh, yes. I'm like, hey, oh, wait, that's right. Oh, no, that's right. Yeah, good. You passed the test. None of us can say we've never disobeyed God's orders, but sometimes we act that way. We think we all that in a bag of chips. We're so special. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, I love that, when this son of yours, he ain't my brother. He doesn't say, when my brother came up, when this son of yours, yeah, we do that all the time. When the kids are bad, I look at Heather, man, what are your kids doing? They're your kids too. Not right now. When this son of yours, who has squandered your pride, as if the dad has forgotten, like, Dad, I need to give you an FYI. Your son just wasted half your money. And it's gone. It will never be gotten back. We can work until kingdom come, and we're not going to recoup our losses. It's bad. He squandered your property. And then, of course, he puts the dig in with prostitutes. Of course, I don't know how he knows that. I guess he just assumed. It's not like the brothers talk, like, hey, what did you do in your wild living days? No. He's just assuming this. You kill the fattened calf for him. And look what the father says. Again, you cannot mistake just how amazing God is. Because he takes those people who have slapped him in the face and ran off and lived their life however they wanted to live it, in doing whatever they wanted, he will accept you back. And then he takes the rest of us, grumpy, sour-faced Christians, who sit around acting all righteous and entitled and throwing pity party for ourselves. And what is, you know, because if I was a father, I'd be like, man, son, I'm going to have to take you out of the woodshed now too. But what does he do? He looks at his son and he loves him. Does he love the Christians and the non-Christians? Does he love those that are lost? Does he love those that are found? Wow. When you talk about the loving father, and of course, you know, every sermon that I listen to, every pastor I talk to about this, they always say the same thing. It really shouldn't be, you know, the parable of the prodigal son or the parable of the lost son. It should be the parable of the loving father if we really want to get to what the meat of it is. This dad is absolutely loving. What does he do? My son, the father said, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. That's what it means to be a Christian. Everything God has, we have. Everything that God enjoys now, we enjoy. Jesus Christ resurrected from the dead and is no longer held by the grave. Jesus enjoys that. We enjoy that too. We are going to be with God forever. And if that's not enough for you, I'm sorry. That's maybe another day to ponder. We ponder at what our sin does, putting Jesus Christ on a cross. But then we ponder, what does it mean to be with God forever? What does it mean to be in a place where there's no more taxes? Oh, wow, that just cheered everyone up. Like, whoa, no more 8.75. Are we at that now? 8 points, I think it already happened, right? Yeah, everyone went out and bought stuff early. Imagine a place where there's no more bounced checks. Imagine a place where there's no more cancer. Imagine a place where there's no more smashing your finger with a hammer. I can't wait to wield a hammer and actually pound something in and hit it perfectly each time. Or I'll just think it with my mind. I'll be like, hammer, you know, and it doesn't. Imagine no more getting your heart broken. Imagine no more someone betraying you. No more ripping out your heart and having someone stomp on it. No more crying. Imagine a place with no more death. That's what we get if you are with God. But then we celebrate. We rejoice then when those that are lost come back home. When those that wandered from the faith and all of a sudden says, you know what, I think I'm going to come back. Yeah, we rejoice and we celebrate because this brother of yours is once dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is now found. So where are you? Are you lost? Are you at the point where you're still slapping God in the face? Are you in the place of wild living? Are you on the road back? Have you just passed the outskirts of town? Are you at the point when God is going to run to you and hug you and kiss you and restore you? Are you already back and celebrating? Are you ticked off in the side yard? Or have you come in to enjoy the celebration? I think that's the joy of Easter, is it's a time to celebrate. It's a time that we surrender to God. It's a time that we say, all right, I've tried my life. I've tried my living. I've tried my way. I've tried running things the way I want to run it. And it just has not worked out. And that's when we say, I give up. Like that man wondering about the food that he's going to eat. And he says, I guess it's time to swallow my pride and go back to the Father. It's time to surrender. And if you're the grumpy Christian on the side, maybe it's time to give up that too. And rejoice. You're saved. You're going to be with God forever. Father in heaven, as we... First of all, thank you for Jesus Christ, for this day that he conquered the cross. He went through horrible humiliation. He died. And then he came back to life. We could spend eternity and not thank you enough for your willingness to do whatever it took to bring us back to you. Lord, I pray that you would be with those that are just simply rejecting God and walking away. I pray, Lord, that as they turn and look and see the cross, they see the death, they see the humiliation, that they would maybe give that a second thought and return. I pray, Lord, for those that are in distant land, far away from you, just doing their own thing, really essentially not caring. I pray, Lord, for those who are in the pigsty and have hit rock bottom. I pray, Lord, for those who are coming back, walking that long road, wondering, maybe even guessing, what are you going to do when they return? And Lord, I celebrate and I am so thankful for those who have returned to you and you have bestowed on them a robe, a ring, sandals, and you've thrown a party for them. Lord, I pray for those in the side yard, angry, bitter, upset, entitled. And I pray, Lord, that we would all gather with you as our Father. And first of all, thank you for your absolute love for us and your willingness to do anything for us. So as we take time now, Lord, we simply just surrender to you. And Lord, now we just take some time because I don't know where everyone's at, but you do. And I pray that this would be a moment that we would gaze at the cross, that we would gaze at Jesus Christ and the price he paid, and now come into our hearts and bring us back to you.
I invite you to just keep your eyes closed. Because I don't know what it would have taken to walk back that road. But I know that there's times that we just have to, we have to do something. And I want to be able to pray for you. But I don't want to call you out or embarrass you in any way. So just simply keep your eyes closed. And if you want to come back to God, just simply pray in your heart right now, Lord, I'm coming back to you and I surrender. And if you are coming back to God right now, just simply raise your hand. Keep your eyes closed. Just simply raise your hand so that I can pray for you. Thank you. You can go ahead and put your hands down. Lord, as we come back to you, we realize we need to surrender. We need to lay down our own rights. We need to sometimes give up our own pride. And we just have to come back. And you've called us back. And I'm so thankful that as we walk that road, we don't have to wonder what you are going to do. Because you've already died for us. And we already know what you're going to do. You are going to wrap your arms around us. And you are going to love us.